This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Cosmo Happy Hour. It's everything you would talk about with your best friends, from sex to celebrity to entertainment.
From the editors of Cosmopolitan.com, this is the Cosmo Happy Hour with Alisa Benson.
Cosmopolitan.com recently conducted a survey with men and women about their perspective on sex, of course, because it's Cosmo, and more specifically on STIs. From getting tested to talking about it with a partner, or for many, not getting tested and not discussing it with their partner. Well, the results from the survey were startling, to say the least, and because we are Cosmo, we'll not let something this important go without discussion. I'm Alisa Benson. This is Cosmopolitan.com's Happy Hour podcast, and today we're talking about STIs. Joining me on the panel today is Cosmo's senior sex and relationships editor and frequent friend of podcast, Allie Drucker. Hi, Allie.
Hi, Alisa. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Are you so excited to be talking about STIs?
So excited to be talking about STIs.
Of all the sex podcasts we've done together, this is obviously going to be the best one we've ever done.
Clearly, because it's about your health.
Right, about your health. Everyone's favorite topic. Quickly, I was just, before we started, asking you, everyone knows what an STI is, right? Or like, do you want to just like go over that again?
Right. There's no shame if you don't, but if not, time to learn. STI stands for a sexually transmitted infection. In days of yore, it was sexually transmitted disease, but that term is a little bit less applicable because not every thing you contract sexually is a disease, right? It might not be chronic. It could be curable with antibiotics. Thus, infection is less stigmatizing and more correct at times.
You know what? I just had a thought right as you're talking now. Is it less stigmatizing? STI is still kind of it feels like such a category.
Yeah. I mean, like, listen, there's never going to be a great way to talk about like an infection that's potentially really scary and bad for you that happens to be like involving your genitals. Like, there's no lovely way to sugarcoat it, but I'd rather think of it as like an infection rather than like I'm diseased and ruined forever.
No, that's true. I have to say, the thing I always say about STIs is like the same thing that I say about pink eye, which is just like everyone has had pink eye. Everyone gets it. Like you go to the doctor. First of all, it either goes away on its own or you go to the doctor and get drops and it's like gone in a few days. But people like lose their shit about it.
Right. It's just like one of those things that feels viscerally unappealing. But if you unpack it, treatable. Everyone's experienced it. Everyone's been exposed to it. And we'd be a lot better off if we could just be nicer.
Right. If we could just be nicer. And I think the other thing is, like the pink eye example, like a lot of these STIs are treatable, especially if you're going early on, which underscores the entire point of the survey, which is get tested.
Totally.
Like if you know you can deal with it and then everything
right.
will be fine.
And of course, like there are some that are chronic that, you know, aren't curable, but are, you know, there's treatment available that like herpes that is in your system forever. But, you know, that's not all of them. And even if it is, like, there's been so many advances that can help people take control of their sexual health and manage their day-to-day, even if they do have a chronic STI, that it really is time that we stop looking at it like a death sentence and we start arming ourselves with information about it.
Right. And also, everyone has herpes.
Right. Like, literally everyone, it seems like.
People just get confused about it because I think they think that the worst-case scenario is the only strain of it.
We could have a whole separate podcast on herpes.
Yeah, I'm sure that will really draw on the listeners. Okay, so I think we've jumped right into talking about STIs in general, but can you share some of the top line sort of findings from this survey? Basically, the sort of overall finding was that people, especially men, aren't really getting tested for STIs.
It's true.
Right?
Men are 3 times likelier than women to say they've never been tested for an STI, like literally ever in their lives.
It's like, how do you live in this world?
No, it's
you can't like walk down a college campus without someone asking you if you want to be tested for STIs.
And it's really scary. Like the findings do indicate that overall, young people are just not bringing up these conversations of like, hey, when was the last time you've been tested? Enough. But more troubling, I think, for us is that men are really letting women shoulder the burden of this. You know, like most men will say, like, their partner was the one to bring it up rather than they themselves. So we find that like women are kind of being the caretakers of their sexual health and their partners by being kind of the gatekeeper to say like, wait, hang on, what's going on?
And in like a more macro sense, I think this isn't surprising because that's how sex has been for a really long time.
Yeah.
Like the onus is on the woman to be on birth control.
Because she's the one who could get pregnant.
Exactly. And just even the whole, and I guess actually in this case, I sort of feel a little bad for men. But, you know, women, I think typically were a little more socialized to like see a gynecologist on the regs. And I think some men don't feel like they have that sexual health doctor.
And the CDC doesn't really recommend men getting tested more than like once a year unless they think they've been exposed to something or they're seeing a symptom or a partner has told them. So really healthcare providers are following the general guidelines, and it makes sense because women are more susceptible to some STIs. And a lot of like clinics might be operating on like federal funding, so they want to get the most like bang for their buck over where these tests are being administered and what money they're spending.
It feels like there could be a real opportunity. I know you were just saying really serious things, and I'm going to take this AMEADS in a non-serious direction.
Works for me.
But like, I feel like there could be an opening for like a mano, like man gyno.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I'm going to think about that idea more and we can talk about it more later. So part of the point, as always, with the amazing articles and information, Allie, that you put together in your section every day on cosmopolitan.com is to help readers feel empowered. And around this topic specifically, even though some of the findings, and when we jump on the phone with Amelia a little later, we will delve into in more detail. Some of the findings are a little like, to be really articulate about it. You know, you're doing this all with the intent to empower readers and give them information. How do you think this helps women become, how do you think this is, these survey results move the conversation forward?
I think, for one, it kind of brings to the light something that you might have suspected but don't know for sure. And it kind of helps you see really what a risk you're at. Like, it's what, almost like one third of survey respondents said they've had an STI in their life, or like one third have had one or don't know. And then we've also found like 1 out of 9%, I think, of the survey respondents had lied to a partner about whether like the last time they'd been tested. So it's really exposing that risk, which I hope, like, sometimes a little bit of fear can jolt you in the right direction, because it is about saying like, yeah, it does suck that like men aren't stepping up, but like, what can I do to not be a statistic if I don't have to be?
Mm-hmm.
And so in the package, we have a few different pieces, and one of them is strictly about like how to have this conversation, which we like interviewed some sex therapists, some experts. And I think that's like really actionable tools for young women.
Definitely, definitely. And just think, if every man out there, every girl he hooks up with, or every partner he hooks up with asks him that question, have you been tested? Like, eventually.
Exactly.
Right.
It's education too. Like, you, like, yeah, you might have the burden of doing it now, but you also get to be like, hey, like, I think your future partners would probably like it if you like stepped up and asked about this too, because like, it's your penis too that's like in this horse race. So start
definitely,
caring.
Definitely, definitely. You don't know what kind of things your peen is like carrying around unnoticed.
Exactly.
For sure. So I said earlier that we were going to jump on the phone with Amelia. I feel like this is a good time to have her bring to light
Absolutely.
Some of the other startling survey
Our
results.
Our fabulous data journalist who helped us crunch all these numbers and interview and put together this fabulous report.
Absolutely. Our first guest analyzed the results of a survey by Cosmopolitan.com all about STIs, and the results were so shocking. Here to help us make sense of this is Amelia Thompson-DeVoe. Hi, Amelia.
Hi.
So what was your overall reaction to this massive survey about STIs?
I have to say it was really disappointment. I mean, you look through these results and you see kind of an overwhelming pattern, which is that lots of young people are not getting tested for STIs, and they're also not talking about STIs. And, you know, it's just really crucial, especially when you're young, to get screened for STIs regularly, and especially when you're having multiple partners, you're not always having protected sex. It's just something that you really want to be on top of, because it can have pretty serious health implications down the line. And of course, it can also have very serious implications for your partner. So it just seems like that this isn't something that's really on young people's radar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that is kind of a failure of the sex education system in the United States
completely.
Or something that we're looking at here.
Well, I think, I mean, not that my own shitty like sex education growing up in Ohio is necessarily representative of what everyone's was, but it's like you learn about STIs and you see the terrifying pictures of them, but like it never, it's like this is a bad reason not to have sex. There was no conversation whatsoever that I remember about having a conversation around this, and it is still so stigmatized that I think people don't even know where to begin. And one of the things, of course, that came to light in these survey results were how different men and women think about STIs in terms of getting treated. And so I think that makes it even more complicated that for 50% of the population, they're not necessarily, they're thinking about this even less than ladies.
They're not doing 50% of the workload when it comes to talking about these crucial issues before sex.
Right. So, Amelia, what was your reaction to the story about the reader named Bree who asked her partner if he'd been tested, and he basically avoided answering the question and kind of eventually admitted that he hadn't been tested at all? Do you feel like that was representative of what you're seeing out there?
It was absolutely representative. And, you know, I mean, to be fair, I think women are pretty uncomfortable talking about these issues, too.
Totally.
You know, they're more likely to bring them up. But I don't think that women necessarily know how to bring them up in sort of the best context. You know, in this story, Bree kind of didn't know at what point to bring it up. And so she sort of brought it up mid-hookup. And I think that's maybe not always the time that is best if you want to get a sort of honest and relaxed answer out of your partner. So obviously not to criticize Bree, these are really, really difficult conversations to have. But the other thing that really stuck out to me about that story was that the partner that she was hooking up with didn't just say that, you know, oh, I'm fine, and then finally admitted he hadn't been tested. He said that the reason he was fine was because he'd only hooked up with nice girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is really representative of, you know, just kind of men's attitudes in general, whether they're aware of it or not, which is that if you hook up with nice girls, then they won't have STIs because they're kind of taking care of this for you. They're the ones who are getting screened. They're the ones who are making sure that they've got birth control covered and everything else. Heard from a lot of women that men never have condoms on them, even in situations when you would really expect them to have a condom on hand. So I think there is this sense among men that, you know, maybe this is a thing they should be thinking about, but as long as they're hooking up with the right kind of girls, whatever that is, this isn't something they necessarily have to worry about because it's kind of not their problem.
Completely. And like, not only is that just incorrect, like STIs don't care about if you're nice or not. It's also like super stigmatizing. Like you can have an STI and like have done everything right. You know, like there's really no such thing as safe sex. There's only safer sex. And this kind of classifying people as like nice or not nice based on testing results is just like really damaging.
And I think statistically we know that it's like most people do have STIs. Like it's a huge percentage of people that do have them, which I think sort of, I don't know. And one of the things that I feel like for me that these survey results really highlight is the sort of gender, the gender gap in STIs. But it's just brings to light how uncomfortable all of this is to talk about, because, you know, you think about the breeze of the world or you think about your own self and you do have that conversation with someone and say, when is the last time you were tested? And they say, I don't know, or they haven't been tested. So do you just like literally not hook up with them? I mean, maybe that's what you shouldn't, you know, like how do you sort of, how does like a girl in the world deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I actually talked to a couple people who were telling me these stories about how, oh, you know, I was about to hook up with this guy and then I asked the question and he was like, oh, I haven't been tested for 3 years, or oh, I've never been tested. And then, you know, the story will kind of end and I would follow up again and say, so what did you end up doing? And the answer would be, oh, we had sex anyway.
Yeah.
And I got tested afterward. So, yeah, I think it's really tricky.
I am hooked up with a guy that had HPV, which he told me before we hooked up, but he like told me later I just like don't even know how to tell this story. This is a judgment-free zone. But he told me later that he basically tells that to people when he's already hooking up with them.
Yeah.
Because but, like it usually is not shutting down a sexual encounter, but it's like it's like his get out of jail free card is feeling like he
told like, people. He's banking on the momentum he's built up that like you're not going to want to say anything because he's playing off of the way women are socialized to like feel guilty
right.
if something goes wrong. Like it would be your fault for like quote unquote leading him on and like cutting things off at the last minute because of this disclosure when
right.
like really he should have done it so right. much earlier.
Right.
Or you would be stigmatizing him.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Like yeah, I don't really know anything to say about that, except this is the one thing I will say. I love that storyline in Girls where one of the characters gets HPV and she's like, why am I blanking on her name?
Hannah
gets Nina HPV and she's like, wait, what's the cousin's character? This is turning into a terrible
Jemima
story.
Jemima
Kirk's character is like all adventurous women do.
Yep. That was long lead up.
That was a really long lead up.
To the fact that at least HPV is now being talked about in popular culture, which is a plus.
Right, which is a plus, exactly. So, Amelia, what do you think should be everyone's biggest takeaway from these survey results?
Women need to get screened. This is one thing that, and men too, but, you know, if we're talking to, like, Cosmo girls or a female audience, like really get screened. One of the things that came out of my conversations with a couple of medical experts is that one of our findings in the survey was actually that women are twice as likely as men to have had an STI, even though they're better about getting tested. And that's because young women are a lot more susceptible just biologically to STIs, especially chlamydia. And chlamydia is often symptomless. So you can have it and not know it. But when the infection goes on for a long time, one of the eventual results can be infertility. So this is really serious stuff. And the CDC recommends that young women under the age of 26 get screened every year. You can just do that at your OB-GYN appointment every year. So that's the first thing. And then I think the second thing is really to just keep talking about this with partners. Like we were just saying before, it's really hard to tell someone, you know, you have this conversation and someone says they haven't gotten tested. You know, ideally you should not have sex with that person. If you think the relationship is going somewhere, I could maybe say, hey, you know, it's really important to me that you do this and we can go get tested together and I know where to do that and sort of maybe have some like information on hand so it doesn't seem like it's this big scary thing that you're asking someone to do. But one of the, you know, medical experts I interviewed put it really well, which is she said something along the lines of, it doesn't matter if you're getting screened and doing everything to protect yourself. If your partner isn't, then it's kind of, you know, it might be all for nothing. So I think that's really, really important. And then obviously to guys, just get tested, especially if you're sleeping with multiple partners, you know, if you're just starting a new relationship with a new partner, there are lots of places to get inexpensive tests. And this just shouldn't be as big a deal as everyone seems to think it is.
Right. Well, I think that's all such great advice. Although I have to say, like, a lot of that sort of fits a little bit better if you're talking about a partner that, first of all, cares about you.
Right.
Not everyone you have sex with cares about you. But second of all, someone you're actually in some sort of relationship with. And I think what gets tricky about all of these scenarios is if your sexual encounters aren't with people that you're actually in a relationship with.
Right. And it makes it so much harder. But we did interview some experts about how to have this conversation for another piece in this package. And the main point they can give you, like, look, people are going to have one-night stands. One-night stands can be, like, really fucking fun. So in those cases, just have the conversation as soon as you can. Like, have it in the cab home instead of the bed right before you're about to, like, put a penis in you.
Right.
So take whatever, like, leeway you have. It might not be much time and, like, that, you know, that's life. But be as responsible as you can about asking as soon as you can.
Right.
Yeah. And you can get tested afterward.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah.
You know, use a condom, get tested afterward. There are still ways that you can kind of, you know, not ask end every sexual encounter because your partner can't remember the last time he got tested. But,
right.
You know, you can just go in the next week and go get tested yourself and then you'll know.
Yeah. Right.
And
right.
Condoms are great.
condoms are great.
Right. Oh man, I feel like this phone call is like kind of turning depressing. Was there anything, Amelia, you found optimistic about any of these survey results?
I found it really optimistic, the number of women who said that this is a priority for them, that they ask the question and they have the conversation, and even if they don't always know what to do with the information they get, they're still feeling, you know, pretty comfortable bringing it up, even if it's super awkward and they don't like doing it.
Right.
So I think that's really optimistic, and we just have to hope that guys kind of learn from their female partners that this doesn't have to be scary and terrible, and it's a conversation they need to have too.
Oh my God, men, get on my level for once. Okay, Amelia, I know you have to run, but thank you so much for all your help on this package, which we're so excited about on the site, and for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Our next guests are comedians and hosts of the super funny podcast, Guys We Fucked. Welcome, Corinne Fisher and Christina Hutchinson. Hey, gals, how are you?
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Hi.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling in. Where are you guys calling from?
New York City.
Oh. Yeah,
two different places in New York City.
Oh, right down the street. Well, hello. So we wanted to bring you guys on because obviously we're huge fans of the podcast, and we are doing this entire episode all about STIs. We did a big survey that had some scary results. Basically, I mean, this probably won't surprise you, but ultimately, men are not paying attention to STI prevention the way that women are. Men basically assume that women are the ones getting tested and the ones that will bring it up if there's a problem. None of this is shocking. What has been your guys's experience? And like, you guys have always been so open talking about all things related to sex in terms of like slut shaming in women and STIs.
Well, this is Christina. For me, my partner had just gotten out of a relationship with a porn star. So I remember before we our second date, he said, "Oh, I went to a clinic and got tested and I'm clean and here's my papers." I didn't even ask him to do that.
What?
And I was like, "Oh, that's a good, yeah."
That's okay, amazing.
That's, we both know that status. And he's always been so proactive about sexual health, probably because of his last girlfriend, which is great. So he kind of got me out of my shell with talking about getting tested. I got tested every year at my GYN exam, but, you know, we have a much more open dialogue with the podcast, plus with that experience at the beginning of our relationship, kind of brought me out of my show with that. And then I realized, wow, we should be asking this to every single person we're sleeping with.
Yeah.
Why I did not ask that question to a lot of the men I slept with.
And where did it happen? I mean, I think that's so interesting because it is so, and that was one of the things we uncovered in this big survey, is that it's so rare for men to bring this up and even get tested at all. Where, you said you were like walking home, like was this on the street? Like, I'm curious about the moment where he was like, by the way.
Yeah, it was actually, we were in Chelsea. He like kind of walked, he met me at my work and we kind of walked home. And he told me, "Oh, I just went to the clinic, I got tested and here's, you know, clean bill of health." And then there was a couple tests that took a second to get the results from. But, he's always been proactive about that. But I think also his experience with dating a porn star, they get tested. The testing that happens in the porn community, especially if you're like a famous porn star,
yeah,
you get the bougie service of getting tested, in between every single scene. But, they're so anal about it, pun intended, and so I think that got him thinking and kind of being on top of his shit more. But men can carry STIs and STDs and not even realize it because there's no symptoms, right? Like
right.
HPV, there's not even a test for men,
yeah,
which is bullshit. And they could be a carrier and I have no idea, even if they are proactive about it.
Absolutely.
Well, I was gonna say it's also like, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, it's fun to be like, you know, men are lazy, and like they are, but it's not. I gotta say, it's a lot harder for a straight man to catch anything from a straight woman, so I think that's why they're a bit more lackadaisical about it. And it's certainly selfish because they're just only caring about themselves and like what they're getting, but that's also why. It's really, really, I know like everyone likes to be like, be safe about everything, and you absolutely should, but from a scientific standpoint, it's a lot harder for a penis to contract something from a straight woman's vagina. It's very difficult. Unfortunately, we get the really raw end of the stick.
It's true.
It's very easy. Like a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's really easy for us to contract STIs and carry them, and it's a nightmare.
Yeah. One of the things I feel like we've been grappling over in this episode is just, you know, even if you do sort of like suck it up and have the conversation, or like you're not afraid to just like straight up, you know, Christina, like your partner did, sort of straight up say, I got tested, here are my papers, like, what about you? You know, even if you're not afraid to have that conversation, it's sort of the outcome, of course, you're looking for is for someone to say, yes, I've also been tested and everything's right. good down there. And what do you really do if someone is like, I, you know, like, how realistic is it that people are sort of stopping hookups or like walking away from this?
I think it's,
I don't think it happens often at all.
It's
but
true.
Like my boyfriend and I would have had a couple three ways with a woman that we would meet on this one app. Like we had two with each of the women that we met on an app, but we had like a kind of getting to know you over drinks kind of thing first.
Yeah.
To make sure. And one of the first questions, and we even put this on the profile of that app, is like, we are tested, we are proactive about our sexual health, and we value that in a partner, and that's a deal breaker for us.
Yeah.
So, but then it's like, well, if they say yes, they could be lying, or they could have something and not know, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's weird to be like, let me see your papers.
Yeah.
That sounds weird and demanding and I don't know, but as, if you really think
and
about it.
And it's not super sexy. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know.
It's not sexy at all.
Right.
Yeah, you have to be realistic about sex in that, like, yes, there's a million things we should be doing, but realistically, what are the actual actions that we can take that are things that make sense in a real world situation? And while it's lovely that Stephen presented, you know, papers to Christina, that's not.
It's so rare.
And we certainly can't expect that from people. So, I mean, just as with everything, there's a real trust going into a sexual relationship, you know, whether it be a one-night stand or a long-term commitment. There has to be some level of trust there. And, I mean, a lot of times you just have to follow your gut. Does this seem like a believable person? I mean, and it's a real crapshoot.
Absolutely. Well, and I'm even thinking,
yeah,
the stigmas
are crazy, but like with herpes specifically is the one we get the most emails about, because you have to tell anybody you sleep with if you have it. You have to.
Yeah.
Morally, you are obligated to. I mean, not legally, but and getting around that. And I have a close friend who got herpes because her partner had cheated on her, and that's how she got it. So already that blows. You're going to have to the rest of your life unless they come up with a cure. And now
it's a reminder
of infidelity. Huh?
I think you can sue for someone giving you an STI. There have been certainly cases of it. I don't know if they won or not. It's not like a law, but you can certainly sue someone. But at the point when you already have herpes, it's kind of too fucking late.
Yeah, like if they willfully, you know, don't disclose information that can harm you.
But
before you sleep with somebody, to have to tell them that's horrifying, because that stigma around herpes is insane. And really, if you think of it, it's not a life or death situation. It's not the end of the world. It's not, you know what I mean? So it's, it sucks that, and so many people have it. And it's so interesting to me that everyone treats it like the scarlet letter.
Right. Well, actually, Allie and I, before we jumped on the phone with you guys, we're already having a deep discussion about herpes. And we're like, we need to do a whole podcast. Yeah, a whole episode about herpes.
But
that is one of the things that is so confusing about it, with the multiple strains, that really it is so common. There's so much confusion over the idea of like, yeah, if you have a cold sore, that can be like sexually transmitted. But people think that's like a different category of.
Yes.
Right.
It's very confusing.
And no one knows the knowledge. It's so hard. The fact that Corinne and I had debated on the podcast, like, wait, can you get herpes if someone has a cold sore and they go down on you? And we're like, how do we not know this? And then some people said yes, some people said no. It can transfer.
Well, I said yes. Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It scientifically, yes. But it's like. Not to go into promoting our stuff, but when Corinne and I have a book coming out, and one of the sections, I was going through our emails, and that close friend, I actually had her write a section on how it feels to talk to her sexual partners now from now on. It's the first thing she has to say before she sleeps with them.
Yeah.
How does that conversation go? How does that make you feel? How does that, and it's a constant reminder, and it does alter the way you do things in terms of the way you sleep with people and the way you date and the way you, but then in reality, we should be having this conversation before we sleep with people, regardless of, your status on STIs. So
right, and I think herpes is actually a perfect example of why talking about this is so important, is because there is such a layer of confusion about it. So people who are living with it and dealing with it and doing the responsible thing and disclosing to partners, I think there are instances where they face the reality of that stigma, when the truth is, like, so many people have it. People have had cold sores their whole life and don't think that that's something that they need to disclose, or it wouldn't even occur to them. And, you know, that misinformation only sort of makes the problem worse in some ways. But I do want to say, since we're going really hard on herpes, that a lot of people with herpes have very happy, satisfying sexual relationships in lives, so that bears repeating.
And it doesn't have to be this like sentence, this death sentence. I think one of the things that I was so interested in through, like, if I just typed in the word herpes in our search box in our inbox, and there, I mean, a lot of the subject lines for those emails were, "I don't think I'm deserving of love because I have this."
It's so
sad. That's not connected at all,
right?
Well, that's not really, yeah, and that's social stigma, though. But that's the power of shame, and
right,
how it can make somebody just go into their shell in a way that it might sound illogical to us talking about it right now, but to the people who have it or have been through, or, you know what I mean? Like, that is something that crosses their mind, and that's, I was like, oh, fuck, that sucks.
Right. Do you guys think, I think it's a really interesting point that you brought up earlier, that there doesn't really feel like there's anything sexy about having the STI conversation. Do you think there would ever be a way to sort, like, not necessarily like make it sexy, but like, I wonder, you know, I know there's been a lot talked about and written about how rare it is to see condoms used in sex scenes in television and movies, but every once in a while you do actually see a character make reference to that. Can you guys imagine a world where we're ever see characters having STI conversations?
I can. I mean, I've had it. I think the way Steven presented it to me was kind of, we hadn't talked about sleeping together, but we both kind of knew it was headed towards that.
Yeah.
We hadn't slept together at that point. And the way he said it, he was like, "Hey, I like being proactive about my sexual health. It's something that's really important to me. So I want you to know that I just got tested, and here's my thing. If you want to see it, cool. But, you know, I would like to know your status, too. Let's talk about that." Like, I don't know. It certainly is not a sexy conversation, but I think the way, when it's presented in this matter-of-fact tone of, like, "Hey, what do you want to eat for dinner tonight?" Then it just, you don't even...
Right,
strike you as something like, "Oh boy, oh no, this is weird and awkward."
A guy who is in charge of his sex life is sexy. Although, like, I will caution that a lot of the experts are saying, like, this conversation is not foreplay. It has to happen before sex, but do not treat it like foreplay. Otherwise, you will wait too long, and you'll be at the point of no return. Like, have it beforehand. It's not supposed to be sexy. You're basically asking somebody for their medical history.
Right. What if I, you guys?
But
what if I
tell someone's healthy and take care of if somebody takes care of themselves, that's sexy, and that's
exactly
part of taking care of yourself.
Right. What if I just text this guy I just started talking to on Hinge right now?
Oh my God, you should do it and see how he reacts.
Right, exactly.
How much do you like him? Are you willing to scare him off?
I like him zero, to be honest.
Well, then there you go.
But
he
that's
seems
how
like a perfect
candidate. Until you meet them, exactly. So finally, I want to give you guys a chance to talk about the podcast and also about the upcoming book. Like, what you guys do in talking so openly and with such humor about all of these topics really does help build... really does help fight these stigmas around STIs and so many other things. What kind of stories do you guys hear? And it sounds like you get so much feedback from readers. What kind of things have you heard in terms of people saying, like, this really helped me, or this made me feel better about XYZ?
Made me feel better, or made the listener feel better?
Yeah, I'm just wondering about the kind of feedback that you guys hear from readers.
I mean, we feel every day, from, like, the littlest thing about, like, "You made me feel better about my inverted nipples," to, like, "You made me feel better about my entire marriage," or having children or not having children. So, I mean, it's just that anything you can possibly think of that people have felt shame or bad about, people have felt shame or bad about. Like,
right.
It's truly, like, the limitless.
Sexual assault's a big one. There's so many, any scenario in life, any situation that could possibly happen to a person, whether it's good or bad, people have, no one person, people are not going to have the same reactions to. So we've had people email us saying they have been raped twice
and is it me? And there were a year apart, totally separate circumstance. No, it's not you. And then one girl emailed us, or a couple, this has happened a couple times. I mean, they were sexually assaulted, but they don't feel bad about themselves. And is that bad that they don't feel bad? And it's like, oh, Jesus. I mean,
right.
You know, and the main thing is how you feel about something, that an event that you've been through, especially if it's traumatic, like, it's okay, you know, however you deal with things and however, whatever mechanisms, coping mechanisms and ways of healing work for you, don't work for everybody, but that's fine. They shouldn't work for everybody. So I think, I just recently discovered a couple weeks, or I think it was maybe last week or 2 weeks ago, on the intro we talked about this, that I've been giving blowjobs wrong this whole time. And
wrong?
I didn't know about certain suction moves you had to do. And, you know, when I had this realization, like, I wasn't ashamed of it. I just thought it was hilarious.
Wait, can we back up? How do you give a blowjob wrong?
So I was just, like, licking it like a lollipop. But apparently you need suction with your mouth. You have to, like, create suction with your mouth.
Yeah.
And missed that part of the memo.
But you can do both. I mean, like, the licking like a lollipop is an important move to, like, intersperse in there with, like...
But that's all I've been doing.
Has that been working?
No one's going to come like that. Yeah, it's going to take a long, long time.
Wow.
Like, it has been at some times, but you know how, like, a guy can have sex with men don't, not that they don't have high standards, but it's easier for men to come than it is for women.
Right.
It's a much less complicated process.
Correct.
Emotionally, physically, all of the, you know, all of the sides of that. So I feel like they were just happy that I was there, you know? And so.
As they should be.
But I was like, oh, I deserve a trophy. No, I don't. No, but it's okay. We're very honest about what we don't know, and I think more people should be honest about that part too.
Very true.
Well, I think it's interesting how you guys play, you end up playing to your listeners this sort of role of being advice givers and therapists, just because you are, because it's rare for people to be able to talk about all of this stuff openly and, again, with such humor. So that ends up being so important for your community. Well, thank you both so much for joining. We should do this again more often. And do you guys want
to
shout out?
We're so close to each other.
Yeah. Do you guys want to shout out again the best place for people to find you and hear the show?
The podcast is Guys We Fucked, the Anti-Slut Shaming Podcast. We're on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, hopefully, as long as that's around, Stitcher. Our social media, our Twitter handle is SRY About Left NYT. Sorry About Left Night is the name of our comedy duo. And I'm at Christina Hutch.
And I'm at Philanthropy Gal.
Philanthropy Gal. And when is the book coming out?
October 24th.
Oh my gosh,
congratulations. Right around the corner. Thanks so much, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Our last guest today is a sexologist, author, TV personality, and host of the super popular podcast, Sex with Dr. Jess. Here to give us tips on how to speak with our partners about STIs is Dr. Jess. Hi, Dr. Jess.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Awesome. Thank you.
So you should know you're joining the podcast at a very exciting moment because we've been talking about STIs the entire show. And basically, it sort of comes down to two things that I'm just going to put you on the spot about. The first is, like, how do you possibly bring up this topic when we've all heard the advice that you shouldn't wait till you're actually hooking up with someone to do it? So what's a good way to do that? And then second of all, you know, what do you really do if someone sort of says, like, I haven't been tested or I don't know?
Well, this is the thing. I think that all the experts are going to tell you that healthy sexual relationship all comes down to communication. And I'm going to tell you that it all comes down to levity, to a bit of a sense of humor. So this is something you can kind of joke about. So, I don't know, you ask them, when's your birthday? April 14th, when's your birthday? February 18th, February 18th, I have some champagne, I eat a cake, and I get tested for STIs. That's my birthday ritual, right? So I know people who get, like, a lot of people in my field, that's how they celebrate their birthday. They get, I mean, it's not the only way. We got other ways to get down, but we also use it as a reminder.
I love tested. That.
Yeah, so it can be a little bit of, I don't want to say it's a joke, because it's certainly a serious issue, but if If you know my work, I'm always joking about sex, despite the fact that I take it very seriously. You don't have to be serious about it at every moment in time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've seen other experts who are STI positive and they're open about it, and they'll joke about it at the bar. Like, even when they're meeting someone, they'll say, yeah, you know, I got famous for writing about my chlamydia once. So, I mean, and these people are still having sex, and they still right. have meaningful relationships. You know, half of us are going to have an STI at some point in our lives.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's a better chance that the person you're talking to has contracted an STI or will contract an STI than not.
Right. And so what about if you have that conversation with somebody, you do the old birthday joke, you find this way to bring it up, and the person does sort of say, like, well, yeah, I have this or I have this. Like, is the official recommendation, like, don't sleep with that person? Or, like, you know, that's, I don't know.
What comes after that?
Yeah, what comes next?
Of course not. Because then half of us would never have sex again.
Exactly.
First of all, so if you have an STI, you don't need to apologize, and you don't need to feel inclined to explain to a potential partner how you contracted the STI. And my advice too is, if you're inclined toward it, share a resource with them, especially if this is someone, you know, you're in a relationship with. They probably have questions that you either can't or don't want to answer. It's not your job, because you have herpes, to know everything about herpes.
Right.
But maybe you show them, like, a support group. You wouldn't believe how many herpes support groups there are on Facebook. So maybe you let them know, you don't apologize, you share a resource with them, because you're not going to be their only resource.
Right.
And I find that people who are comfortable telling, like, friends and other trusted people that they have STIs have an easier time telling a potential partner, because you've said it out loud. It's like anything becomes real when you say it.
Right.
And if somebody reveals that, you know, that they have an STI, you got to thank them for being honest. This open sharing, we have all these chemical reactions that happen in our bodies when we open up and we're vulnerable with someone. And this is one way we build trust in relationships. So, I mean, the most appropriate response would be thank you and be open to learning more. Always bearing in mind that you very well may have an STI yourself, especially if you have not been tested, because, and I'm sure you've been over this, the most common symptom of an STI, of course, is no symptom at all.
Right. Right. I have another sort of micro question about STIs, which is that one of the things that I think can be a little bit confusing is, you know, we've talked earlier on the show about that, how the official recommendation is to sort of get tested once a year or do that birthday test. Or, of course, if you have a risky scenario and you want to, like, go in and get it sooner. But, you know, sometimes, you know, it's a little bit like, come back in another year and see. Like, I know that can be the case with, like, HPV, where it can sort of be like, come, like, your body fights it off and come back again and, like, see you next time. How do you sort of factor in those slightly, like, unknowable aspects of an STI into a conversation with a partner? Like, I might have something, or is tested and this is what happened.
Yeah, like, my pap smear was, like, a little bit irregular,
right,
but not irregular enough that they wanted to do anything about
right.
it.
Right. And, like, a guy doesn't know WTF a pap smear is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that, I mean, an irregular pap smear is not a sign of an STI.
Right.
It could be many different things. I would say that the best thing to do is be as honest as you can. And being honest would entail saying, this is the last time I was tested, and this is what they found.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, STIs have various incubation periods, depending on the infection, on the bacteria or the virus. So if you believe if you have a reason to believe you've been exposed, they'll tell you to come back when the incubation period has ended. So if it's like a 2-month incubation period for an STI, they'll tell you to come back either a few months or a few weeks later, depending on when you've gone in after that high risk experience. So I think you just have to be honest and say, I was tested and this is what they found. I was tested and they didn't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, and so I'm not a medical doctor, I'm a PhD, I have to be really clear about that, an irregular pap could be lots of different things, and
sure.
Generally if you get an irregular pap, they're going to bring you back for testing. It's not usually like, come back in 2 years. What I was thinking is, for instance, let's say you have like a swollen lymph node, like I have a little lymph node under my armpit, like near my breast, right?
Right.
And so they tell me that it's fine, and they do an ultrasound and whatnot, and then they always say, but come back in a year to keep an eye on it. That's not me having to tell people, like, I have cancer or something
right.
like that, right? I just have a lymph node that we need to pay attention to, and I get it checked once a year, or however often the doctor recommends. So I don't think we need to treat STIs necessarily any differently.
Right.
Because I think it's the stigma around it that makes it so difficult.
Right.
Like it's easier to cure chlamydia than the common cold, but we treat chlamydia like it's this really frightening thing. I mean, so many people have gotten chlamydia and you don't even know it.
Yeah. Yeah, I always say to Ellie,
on your own.
Right, I said to Ellie earlier in the show, it's like pink eye. Like, everyone's had pink eye, but people, like, lose their minds about it. They act like it's very scary.
It's that perception of being, like, quote-unquote gross that, like, makes people scared to be honest, which is something we really need to do away with.
And we're all kind of, I mean, I don't like, I'm, I guess, wary of the term, but we're all kind of gross in some ways.
Exactly.
Like, we all behind closed doors that we wouldn't do on the subway.
Like, bodies are gross. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I like to think about, like, the flip side, that they're all, like, if we're all doing it, it's not actually gross. It's the social or cultural conditioning that makes us think it's gross, like plucking a hair while you're sitting on the toilet or something
right.
that everybody has probably done at some point in time, but it's appropriate and not gross to do it in your own bathroom. It wouldn't be appropriate, you know, to do it on the subway sort of thing. So it's a private public distinction, I think. And I do think we need to approach STIs, I don't want to say with more levity. The conversation can have more levity, but also just with less shame and less stigma. Like, this is just something people live with. People have all sorts of illnesses, infections, diseases, but none are as stigmatized as STIs. And that really has to do with our erotophobia, our hang-ups around sexuality, our fear of sexuality, our willingness to have sex but not talk about it. And once we start, you know, eroding away at these cultural norms, then we can start approaching STIs with, you know, a rational approach as opposed to an emotional one.
I think that's such a good point.
Totally.
And so well said. And, you know, those cultural societal norms are what we're all fighting against. You know, one of the ways we're fighting against them here at Cosmo is by doing episodes of the podcast about it, by doing this original research that Ali's team put together. And I think one way that you can fight against it in your own life is feeling as best you can shameless about having these conversations in your own life with your partners. Is there anything else you would recommend, like, for people that want to sort of fight the good fight and fight the stigma?
Well, I think we need to start looking at the data instead of going with our gut on the measurable quantitative and qualitative, you know, data. So there's, you know, the misconception that STIs are just for people who are promiscuous or have sex with lots of different people, or they're dirty or they're careless. And it's really interesting because, and I think this is a really fascinating piece of research that found that people in open relationships, so consensually non-monogamous couples and monogamous couples, actually share the same STI risk.
Mm-hmm.
Because you only have to have sex with one person to contract an STI.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have sex with 100 and not contract an STI. Sure, your risk can be increased, but what we find is people who are having sex with multiple partners, at least in the context of a consensually non-monogamous relationship, are more likely to A, get tested, and B, enact safer sex practices. And then the other piece around STIs is, and this is a real problem we run into as sex educators, there's quite a myopic, heterocentric view of sex that I believe results in sex education programs focusing primarily just on condoms on penises. You can put that penis in a vagina. And we need to address safer sex practices when it comes to a really wide range of sexual activities, whether it be oral sex or manual sex or anal sex. I was talking to a woman the other day who was taught that, I believe it was her boyfriend, believed that sex was wrong outside of marriage. So for years and years, they only had anal. And I mean, that's fine, to each their own. However, there are risks with anal. In fact, there are higher risks with anal than with vaginal penetration in some cases.
Yeah, so many STIs are still spread. Like, any way that you can touch a genital, you can pretty much spread an STI.
Right.
And it's a risk. It's a risk we take. And I know there are people who are, like, afraid. We're seeing young people, millennials, in fact, having less sex. And I do wonder if it is the fear. We have more information now that tells us that, yeah, just rubbing genitals, you can contract an STI with your mouth. We see an increase in throat cancers resulting from HPV virus and in the throat from oral sex. So we don't want to scare people off sex altogether, but we do want to give them the information so they can say, is it worth the risk to me? And what can I do to minimize the risk?
Right. Definitely. And thank you for sharing tips on sort of how to do that. And I think that's a really great piece of advice that you started with about bringing a little levity to a very serious conversation. Because this stuff can get pretty deep and heavy and like make you want to just like never touch another human again. And that's not what we want to do here. There'd be no Cosmo.
Absolutely not. Yeah, exactly. You're not going to write off half of the population
right.
as potential. First of all, I mean, if you're a hetero person, you've already written off half of them.
Right.
You're looking at people within your age range. You're whittling down your dating pool.
Right.
When in fact, you need to practice safer sex. You need to get tested. You need to require that your partners get tested. And the more confident you are in sharing your status, whether it's a positive STI status or negative, and we don't like the language of like clean, right? They'll mm-hmm, say like, oh, I'm right. clean of course, there's gendered layers to the language we use here, right? Talking about dirty. We don't tend to talk about men as dirty, mm-hmm. but women, that tends to be, you know, a word that gets thrown around. And all of that is connected with STI stigma. So a big part of sex education, a big part of women's empowerment, LGBTQ empowerment, all of it is connected with fighting the stigma around STIs.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Dr. Jess. We always love having you on. And do you want to just shout out the best place for people to find out more about you and find your show?
For sure. Sexwithdrjess.com. You'll find the podcast there. And all of my social media handles are @sexwithdrjess.
Thanks so much, Dr. Jess.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Allie, I feel like today's episode of STI Deep Dive was a real emotional roller coaster.
It really was, but we ended on a high note were able to be put at ease by Dr. Jess, who could say, like, you can be funny when you ask this question.
Yeah.
Like, STIs aren't funny, your sexual health isn't funny, but like the way you relate to someone else doesn't have to be so high pressure as right. long as you're asking the right questions.
But you can be funny.
Exactly.
And it was so great to have Christina and Corinne on the show, which we've been wanting to do for a while
because
they're hilarious
great.
About all this stuff all the time. Yeah, and so yeah, I guess you're right. You're reminding me that I can feel ha ha ha.
That's very important. Well, if you are confident and you like walk into a room like, hey, what's up? Ha ha. Like, oh wait, your other partners don't ask you about this. Like,
right.
well, what's wrong with them? What's wrong with you?
Right.
Instead of feeling like you're the one that's like in the minority.
Maybe I should just tweet my last like STI test results. Like, make that my pinned tweet.
Oh my god, I love it.
Yeah. And as I was like joking with in our call earlier, maybe I should just text the guy I'm talking to on Hinge, RN, and like throw it out there. See
yeah,
what happens.
Why not?
But Allie, thank you so much for coming on. Always love having you here.
Of course.
And you do an amazing job every day of bringing humor to the important sexy things you talk about on cosmopolitan.com. Someone's got to do it. So look for this huge piece of research coming soon on cosmopolitan.com in this real deep dive full of more expert information and all the other things we talked about recapped coming soon on the site. And do you want to also shout out your Twitter handle if people want to tweet you their STI results?
Yeah, why not? Tweet me all of your results. You can get me on Twitter and Instagram at Allie, @Allie_Drucker, DRUCKER.
And as always, I am @Elisa Benson. You guys should tweet me, Instagram me your test results. Well, that, or I was actually going to say, like, what you want to see us talk about next here at cosmopolitan.com happy hour. I love hearing from you guys. It makes my day. And I will see you next week. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.